That chart's back in the rotation.
Yeah, I mean, I only have so many.
Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, May 3rd, Pat's birthday week. This birthday weekend, 2022. That's Ian. I'm Pat. On the show today, we'll be talking about WADA announcing modern grading for new games, Switch Sports, Patreon poll topic. Talking about Square selling some of their Western devs and IPs in order to get into NFT games. You probably have a lot to say about that. And other goodies. Real quick, we talked about what we did this past weekend, by and large, on the exclusive Patreon CU podcast, patreon.com/CU podcast. Ian went to Joshua Tree.
I sure did.
And I went to a German restaurant in Milwaukee. So we're talking about that. Anything else that happened before I go into my Midwest Gaming Classic spiel?
Well, I'd like to hear that, but I don't want to bring everything down, but I'm pretty miserable about this moment in American politics. This is bad.
Okay.
And I mean, I you don't have anything to say about that?
Oh, it's not good.
It's not good. And I'm going to try to get through this podcast as best as I can, but this is not great, and I don't know what else to say about it. I can't lie about how I feel. I've been miserable since yesterday.
Well, I was in a better mood at Midwest Gaming Classic this past weekend. Finally got out there. I was invited 2 years ago, and then the pandemic happened, so that delayed it, and I got back out there, and I spoke about a little bit about how different and nice people in the upper Midwest are. Very, very friendly people.
No, they're all very laid back.
Very gregarious sort of group of people. One of the things I like about this nation is that you have different sort of regions with different sorts of people and subcultures and how people talk. And as I said, like, the upper Midwest accent, the Minnesota accent, it is a thing with some people.
It's very real.
Very real. Yeah, absolutely.
People talk about accents. They didn't make
absolutely.
Them up.
Absolutely. They didn't make them up. Real. When I got into the elevator coming down stairs, there was a couple that were like that. I thought it was a put on. It was that thick and heavy. And I was like, oh, wow. And I stayed at this Hilton Inn that was gorgeous. It was like, looked like it was still like in the 1920s when it was built. I mean, it had these golden, like, chandeliers. The chandeliers weren't probably original, but like these lights that were like ornate golden, like drop down sort of thing with these bulbs that were like bigger, sort of older bulbs that like they looked original. They had on these railings these gold ornate designs, lines or something. I'm like, that's old. Like I said, that's old. And they were even playing music in the background, like stuff from like the 30s. And it just seemed like it was like a time warp. It was the Hilton downtown. I looked gorgeous. Gorgeous. The rooms were obviously modernized, but like the bathrooms were tiny. They were probably the size they were like 100 years ago, like tiny bathrooms.
I used to work at a old farmhouse restaurant. It was legitimately an old farmhouse, and the bathrooms were the tiny. They were like half of a closet, maybe a closet. Like we're talking, you sit down on the toilet, and you're basically your knees are touching the walls.
Yeah, it was so old, Ian. The pipe going to the toilet was coming out of the wall next to it. It was going laterally. I haven't seen that before in a hotel ever. You know what I mean? Like it was coming out like attached laterally, not from behind or up. So I'm like that. They've never updated. Like it was probably too much of trouble for each room to update the plumbing there. So
well,
like,
also possibly if it's, I know in Buffalo, one of the main reasons they did not do the renovations on the old building was because it was grandfathered into older codes.
Sure.
So if you do once you start renovations,
then you have to redo
it. You have to renovate everything.
Yeah, so it was weird because like the toilet was like picture your toilet in your bathroom, but like there's a 2-foot pipe coming out the side of it attached to it.
Yeah,
I have not seen that before. And then otherwise it was fine. It was great. Lots of old stuff in Milwaukee. Or even the flagpole. Like I looked out down from my window, there was like golden eagles next to the flagpole that looked old. Like it looked like it was really old. Like everything was old. I loved it. They even had like a theater down the street, Ian, with like the oldie time like the lights on the side, like the bulbs on the side going down vertically.
Yeah.
Around. I'm like, that's old. They might have restored it, but I love that. I love sort of the older sort of Americana downtowns like that. And no, but it was a good time. One of the larger, you know, retro gaming expos, and probably the biggest one I have not been with. I haven't been to the Seattle one. I hear that one's pretty good. But
yeah, I've never done that one either.
But this one was probably the largest, biggest one remaining that I'd never been to. Ian said you went there in 2015.
Yeah, to me, it's if you look at the big three on the West Coast, it's Portland. In the Midwest, in Middle America, it's MGC, and on the East Coast, it's too many games.
I don't think there's one in Chicago that's directly for retro games. There's one for pinball, maybe?
Yeah, probably for pinball, but I went to the MGC as part of a trip to Chicago, so yeah. I think that counts basically as Chicago's big.
Sure.
Chicago just attaches itself to that.
And then they like 50 pinball machines. Pinball machines were amazing. That's where I felt bad that you weren't there, because like the pinball's new and oldie, and they had a lot of pinball machines there. Maybe more than 50. There was more pinball than arcade games.
PRGE, yeah, according to their website, had 60 the last time we were there, and I would say that that's probably about right. Mm-hmm. But I know MGC definitely gets out some unique ones.
Whereas
like Portland's great, but like you kind of have an idea of what you're going to see at Portland. They have moved on to some newer stuff, but
I took a picture when I sent to you.
That MGC is going to get some boutique-ier stuff.
There's literally one. Thanks for reminding me. There's one I literally took a picture I had not seen before that now I'm going to try to scroll back. Someone gave me a Baywatch companion screensaver, Ian.
Oh, very nice.
Sealed there.
I thought that was, since we were talking pinball, I thought you were going to say it's a translate. And I was going to say that would be pretty cool. Let me see it.
Police force with lions. You ever seen that one before?
No, I haven't. Is that a premiere? It's Williams.
Huh. So that's what I mean. I saw ones there I had not seen before.
Oh, the playfield looks familiar, but yeah, I don't think I've ever
played. So that's like mid-80s?
I've never seen that in person. Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like, I saw several like that. I'm like, I don't think I've seen this before. And then if I haven't seen it, maybe Ian hasn't. Yeah, it's animals on the police force. There's a lion next to a cheetah shooting at something, shooting at a lizard man and a shark robbing a bank.
Yeah,
this is amazing.
I've got to be honest. I mean, I figured I knew most of the Williams by sight, but I've never seen that.
That's what I mean. So like, and there was other ones too. Order your official police force hat in the bottom.
Nice.
Now I want police force. So there was like, and there was a lot from the 60s and even some from the 50s that were in great shape.
Nice.
Norm played one, an older one, probably from like the early 60s. I forget. It was almost like old enough to be like, wow, this is a glorified bagatelle, because it was the style, Ian, where balls went into the bonus targets and you lost the ball.
Oh,
but it had flippers still.
Sure.
So yeah. It was like, what was that? What era was that? Was that probably sort of the 50s?
That would have been like the 50s. Early 50s, I think, and they're called gobble holes.
So like, he played one in gorgeous shape. It had a wood frame in the top all around. That was
It's a wood rail. That's the name of that specific era. Is wood
so
rails.
It was in beautiful shape. Yeah, play field
like
that
the
so,
natural like stained wood
yes.
rails. Yeah, yeah. No, yeah, wood rail games are gorgeous.
Okay,
and there are some that play pretty well too.
Yeah. So when I saw it, I was like, "Huh, you're not getting the ball back." It was one of those you have to plunge it in.
Yeah.
You know, with the
all wood rails have gobble holes though.
So. Okay.
Yeah, you have to push the bottom plunger to scoop the ball into. The
Yeah, he did do that each. Because we were expecting the ball to come back, and was like, "Oh no, this is too old. It's not coming back in. You're going to have to do it yourself."
Even some non wood, like the once they started painting them and getting cabinet art, even some of those you still have to do that.
Do the plunge.
That scoop.
This little okay. So yeah, it was great time. Got German food. Hung out with Kelsey. Hung out with Norm. Your pal. Well, he's my pal too. More your pal, Chris from Windy City Gaming.
Oh,
super
Chris.
Nice. Chris is really nice. He was selling his newest thing was selling.
He does refurbished computers.
Yeah. So like finding older sort of computer cases, but then putting in new guts.
Yeah,
basically.
He upcycles them and puts all sorts of cool stuff in there. You can check him out at UCW. It's Upcycle Computer Works. That's his business.
And then we got some good stuff from people sent us good stuff. You want to do a shout out to this person?
Yeah, I do. Hold on.
You got the card there? There it is. So
this was given to me through Pat, and it's amazing. It's Kirby string art.
And I got a DK one on the little barrel.
That's gorgeous. Wood.
Yeah.
That's going to go right in my little work area at home. Morgana 4 is the owner of Walnut's Eclectic String Work or String Art.
So,
and I guess the person who gave it to us was named Corey Hobson. So thank you, Corey.
So it's all strings, and then they're screwed in and wrapped around for the design. So it's really, I don't think I've seen something like this before. It's really ingenious. And I can't imagine, I guess, the time it takes to do this precisely like this, to wrap it around all nice like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And you also got a cookbook from someone?
Got a cookbook from someone, so thank you for this. It came with a box of games. I appreciate it.
And I'm sorry, I forget the name. It was a volunteer helping out with the tabletop board area. And the same person gave me Cool Borders 4 sealed, and also sealed Puzzle Challenge Crosswords on PS2. So I got that, and a bunch of Super Famicom games.
I'm very excited to read this. I feel like this person knew me pretty well, or had a good idea of what I like, because it's not only a cookbook. It's a cookbook based on recipes from what they would make on the trains. And I love trains, so it's trains and cooking together.
Okay.
Can't wait to crack into this. It's wonderful.
All right.
German pancakes.
Oh, German pancakes are good.
Yeah, it is.
Get some of that apple topping on there, or sour cream on there.
Maybe a little bit of both.
I think we
got one bite with one bite with another.
I think we got to go to the German restaurant over here. I haven't been there in like several years, so we got to check it out, Ian.
I will never go there again.
Okay.
Great food, but I will never go there again.
You don't like the people working?
Working there was fucking misery.
Oh, you worked there?
I was telling you about it in the intro.
But you didn't say it was that one over here.
I mean, there's like no other German restaurants.
Well, I thought you meant back east.
But yeah. No.
Okay.
No. Oh, and I want to thank Dave. Thank you. Love popcorn.
Oh, you know who gave it to, yes. that to us?
Yep.
Yeah, Dave gave us both. So it's combination cheese and
cheese
caramel.
Cheese and cheddar. It's delicious. You can cheese get it at the movie theaters now. Oh, yeah, cheese and caramel. Cheese and cheddar.
You can get cheese it is cheddar.
The lot will do that for you.
Is that a Midwestern thing to mix them?
Well, the way he said it, it sounds like it is, because I think he called it like the Chicago mix or something like that. But I've never, I mean, I've been eating cheese and caramel popcorn together for, I don't know, probably a decade now.
Sure.
I tried it at a movie theater, and I was like, this is great, and I kept doing it.
So, yeah, was that Stefan gave us stuff? I'm trying to remember if that was Stefan or the other one. I'm mixing. So, I'm sorry. I meet so many people on the weekend. But thank you so much, everyone, for who gave us the stuff. Thank you so much. It was great coming out. I sold out. I sold out of almost, I mean, everything I brought. I mean, the NES Punk DVDs I sold out of.
Yeah, you said you were close to it, at least. That's crazy.
No, I did.
Oh, you did?
Then I had 3 Video Game Years DVDs left. I sold out of Not For Resale Blu-rays. I sold out of all the pins, podcasts, and the Pixel Pat pins. And I sold out. The books were gone by 2 p.m. Saturday. They're gone. The NES books were gone by 11 in the morning, or 11:30. I usually bring double the amount of Super Nintendo books, because it's been out for half the time.
Sure.
But people were going after the NES book first. And I was just like sort of shocked. I take for granted that if you're the first time in the area, people might be a little bit more maybe excited to purchase this stuff. But like, I was overwhelmed.
It's a whole new market. Yeah. I mean,
the first 2 hours was nonstop for me. And Norm was next to me. And Norm sold out everything too. He has his t-shirts and his little journal books. He sold out by Sunday morning, all his stuff. His shirts were gone by Saturday.
Amazing.
I was just like, wow. So thank you so much. Everyone was great. Pinball was great. The food was great. Made some new friends. We'll bring it up later. I was right next to and behind good old WADA. That was not probably done on purpose, but I was right by them. And they were doing consignments, and no one was at their booth almost the entire weekend. I might have saw 2 or 3 people looking really or sitting down trying to consign the whole weekend out there. There was almost no, we'll talk about it later again, but there was almost no sealed games at the entire convention there.
Yeah, I don't think it's the market for it. I mean, as you said the other night when you mentioned this to me, you know, no place is the market for it. I get that. But I think in particular, MGC is a place where people go to play old games, not slab them.
The vendor area was kicking, though. There was a lot of good stuff.
Oh, yeah.
People were buying. Sure. People were buying.
I know, but I'm saying like they're buying stuff to. It's
traditional collectors. They're not speculators.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. Sure. Oh, yeah. There was someone trying to ask me for trying to find a Turbo Express. I felt bad. I didn't see one over the whole weekend. Someone had a Duo R in the box, one of the vendors.
Nice.
There was like three or four vendors had Turbo stuff. But I think you did see somewhat of the shift of where it's like, yeah, there were probably more PS2 games being sold probably and things like that. I talked to someone named Josh, who owns a store up there. Forget the name of the store. But has, I think he said, kind of hard to believe, but he said, yeah, I have like over 10,000 PS2 games in storage. Basically just buys them and sells them. But they said that's the seller right now, is PS2 games. That's the big thing right now.
And that's what I always said when I worked at Luna. That's like, I left right as PS2. I always say around 22 years old is like when people start.
Go 20 years back.
Yeah, buying all that stuff once they hit like 2022, and we are right at that point now with the PS2. We're right smack dab on 20.
Absolutely.
21.
Switch Sports came out.
Switch Sports.
And unfortunately, we were both traveling. If I was home this past weekend, I would have bought it and played it. I'll try to get it this week and check it out.
Yeah, I would have too. I was not like as thrilled about it as other people were. I just don't necessarily love motion play in my games, but I do love Wii Sports Bowling. And I will absolutely buy this just to play bowling over and over.
I love the baseball game. I thought the baseball game
was fun. Not on this, unfortunately. If it was, I mean, it's not a popular one for most people, but I enjoyed it.
Well,
so Switch Sports is out and it's getting okay reviews. It's got like a 74 right now on Metacritic, and even the lowest reviews say that it's still fun, but basically it's obviously not going to recapture the hysteria that it got on the Wii because motion controls were new. Motion controls, that was like your first experience with motion controls. We've seen the entire lifespan of motion controls since we first played Wii Sports.
Yeah.
From them being popular and then everyone trying to copy them and then everyone getting sick of them and now basically no one using them again unless it's like VR or something.
I still give Sony shit from it. They made fun of it, then they tried to copy it and no one cared.
So I think it is interesting that this is still something that people, after all that, are enjoying.
Sure.
I did feel like this was going to face some pretty... it was going to face a fresh set of eyes in terms of criticism. So, I'm happy to, see that it came out and people are liking it and I want to play it. But something is exactly the same between
itself 15, 16 years later.
So Ars Technica is reporting, Nintendo Switch Sports players are breaking TVs like it's 2006. So they say, so far, these new reports of virtual sports-related accidents are limited but dramatic. What is this writer's name? This is from Kyle Orland. Twitch streamer 63 Man started things off by breaking his monitor live on stream during a particularly energetic tennis swing on Saturday. Has he mentioned he doesn't have a wrist strap, one viewer wrote, so he wasn't wearing a wrist strap.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
That's why they're there. I mean, it's a thing, just in case.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. I remember that being, bigger news back in the day.
This will happen.
Yeah, it happens. Whether it's because it slips out of your hand because your hand is getting sweaty, or your brain just does that weird thing where it mixes up the signals.
Instinct. I'm going to release the ball.
I'm going to release the ball.
I'm going to release the controller. I'm looking at this compilation of old Wii remotes, and someone did that with the bowling. They just released the controller and threw it.
Well, I feel bad because it's fun. It's funny, but like obviously it causes damage. But I don't think the people who are doing it are stupid. Yeah, it's a simple brain trick. That's why I do put the wrist strap on when I play.
Some of these are kids in the old days. So you're looking at this compilation, and the parents got it. I mean, the games warn you beforehand. Yeah. Nintendo does a good job of saying, "Hey, put the wrist strap on." It tells you. So I mean,
I never threw it. So I mean, I have played without a wrist strap. I have been derelict in my responsibilities with Wii Sports before. But one time I was wearing the wrist strap and I did play bowling, and it saved the TV.
Of course,
because it came right out of my hand.
Sure, that's why it's there.
So, yeah, funny stuff.
Yeah, I'm seeing all this compilation from 15 years ago of all these people rooting their TVs or throwing their controller. And it's like, and sometimes there's parents right there. And it's like, hey, parents, put the wrist strap on your four-year-old. What are you doing? Like I'm looking at all these old. So you have to do that with Joy-Cons. I mean, that's the thing.
The only thing I can say is that if you break an LCD TV or a flat panel TV, it's going to be a lot less messy than a tube TV.
And it's cheaper now versus...
Yes, absolutely.
TVs are like 80% cheaper than they were in 2006.
You remember when like tube TVs were like... Good ones were like
several hundred dollars.
Oh, I mean, there were tube TVs that were $1,500. Oh,
yeah. But like some of these people in this video looking at the Wii hitting remote, some are still... LEDs and LCDs were not widely adopted yet in 2006. It would take a couple more years to get there. This is still pre-HD, just about. And but like my Olivia 37-inch was like $1,200 in 2006. $1,200 for a 36, 37-inch in 2006. A 37 inch now, I'm gonna look up how much a 37 if they even sell. I'll just say 40 inch.
You can get one for $300 right now, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you won't get OLED or the fastest refresh rate.
I'm sorry, Ian, how much?
300, 200?
About 200.
Yeah.
So 1/6 the cost. I can get an Insignia 40-inch LED for 180 with $50 off at Best Buy right now. So yeah. So that's like the one positive, is that it won't kill you if you break one of your TVs, but you should really use the wrist strap.
Yes.
But it's supposed to add, well, supposed
and
to
heaven
add,
forbid you have a nice TV like a fucking OLED.
Oh, yeah, those are more expensive. An OLED is more expensive. Yeah,
those are still in like the $1,500 range, yeah, for a nice big one.
But a regular LED, nope. They don't make LCDs anymore. It's all LEDs.
Oh, yeah,
LED. It's cheaper and better tech. They're all, yeah, you can get a 43-inch, 260, 230, 40, 42. Yeah, you can. Like, these are like 4.5-star TVs. Like, there's just, you can put a TV in every room nowadays. It's like, what the hell happened with tech there? So what are the Switch sports games again? That it's a combination of the Resort and the
Bowl. It's got a two from Resort and two from the original. It's got the kendo. I can't remember what they call it, but like the sword fight, and volley. The sword fight and
chambara.
Tennis, bowling, volleyball,
badminton, and football. Or soccer.
Soccer. The badminton is also from Wii Sports Resort. I believe the volleyball is new and the soccer is new.
The soccer thing, you can put it on your you strap it to your thigh and you kick. I saw a commercial with that. They have Jessica Alba's been pushing this with her family. It's weird to think of Jessica Alba being older, having a family. It's like, how old are we? Because she was always like 20 years old. And then golf's coming out later in the year with a free update. Golf was always fun too. Golf was
very fun. I would have been more excited about this if golf was included from the get-go.
I'm hoping for baseball because these are simple games. Hoping for baseball. I don't need boxing. It'd be fun.
No, the boxing sucked.
Boxing, well, because the nunchuck never really worked that well.
Yeah,
with motion as well.
Boxing sucked, and I'm not particularly excited by soccer with the additional gimmick, but.
But if you want to throw them in.
But everything else could be interesting.
Yeah, we can get baseball, and if you want to get back boxing as well. But you know, definitely baseball I'd be into. That was fun to do, like a home run derby thing back then. And then they have...
Maybe I'll pick it up today.
And then you can use... What is this? Alongside Mii's new avatars called Sports Mace have been introduced, which have detailed hair and face as well as arms and legs. Give me the old Playmobil style Mii's. That's the ones I like.
You can use normal Mii's. There's a way to do it, yeah.
Okay, I never brought my Mii over for my Wii to my Wii U, did I? You had to do like a transfer.
Yeah, I don't think you going. Did. There is a way to make a Mii on your Switch. Vonnie showed me, but I just can't remember where it is.
It's like hidden.
WB is selling off basically all of their games, all of their game studios, which the big one for me that I know of is NetherRealm behind Mortal Kombat. And then they're also getting rid of Rocksteady, which was responsible for the Batman Arkham games, WB Games Montreal, Monolith Productions, and Avalanche Software. These, like in terms of games, that would be like Hogwarts Legacy, Middle Earth, Fear, Mortal Kombat, Batman, the Suicide Squad game, all the Lego games, which I did not know were under WB. Hmm. I guess that makes sense. Free to play mobile games. So that's what they're getting rid of.
And this comes on the heels of the Discovery buyout. We talked about them shaking up the whole DC stuff in the movie. So they're shaking up the whole company.
Yeah, so, everything is getting fucking changed right now.
So they're going to sell this off. I mean, they realize we don't want to be in this business anymore. We'll just license out our properties to be made. And so you're going to have bidding wars for probably some of these studios. I mean, you know, that's what's just going to happen.
It says in addition to selling their studios, Warner Bros. Discovery are reportedly looking to license their IP to other publishers, similar to how Marvel does it.
Less overhead, less to worry about.
Yeah.
Why
have an entire games division? Yeah.
Like, why have to worry about it? I mean, it made sense. Because obviously they own the DC stuff, so they keep it in house.
Right.
I did not know they had the Lego stuff. Lego IP? Do they have that for everything?
Makes sense. It's a lot of Warner Brothers properties,
and then,
too.
Mortal Kombat, and then you have fucking Harry Potter stuff, which they make all the movies. So I get it. New sheriff in town. They're trying to streamline, probably, and that's honestly, it's totally different creating movies versus video games. So I can see why, they're doing that. So well, we'll see how it turns out. We'll see if some of these become exclusive maybe Sony will try to buy a couple of these. Maybe Microsoft will.
You know where you can get exclusive CE Podcasts and Pat the NES Punk merch?
Where?
UltimateNintendo.com.
You can go there, Ian. We got the enamel CE Podcast pin. We're running out of them because I just sold a bunch this past weekend. Pat Pixel
pin. We have 12 of the podcast pins left.
Including this one. No, not including that, so that's 13.
And we will likely do a rerun, but you know, later this year, probably. So
We'll see. Yeah. We'll see. The Yoshi prints are gone. Thanks for buying all the Yoshi combat prints. Combat. And I got the books, the certain NES Super Nintendo guidebooks, RBI baseball stickers. Those sold out Saturday morning. I brought about 13, 14. Those all sold out.
She brought the whole roll.
Bring the whole roll. I'm not bringing 2,000, Ian.
If they sold out by Saturday, you could have sold a whole lot more.
I'm not going to sell 1,900 in a week. I should bring like 30 or 40. That's what I should have brought. But then unwinding, it's a pain in the ass to cut them up. It's a pain.
Sure.
And I'll be on. You really want me to bring the whole roll?
I mean, I'm just saying, it's not like it's that raffle big. Ticket.
It's heavy, Ian. Come on. I don't pack lunch.
I'm trying to have you make money here. You left money on the table, Patrick.
Well, make sure we're about the books. How much money left the table, not shipping enough books. And I'll be on Twitch Wednesday, twitch.tv/countrycode. Maybe a birthday stream. I don't know. And then I'm on Cameo, cameo.com/ Pat Contry. If you want me to wish your mom a happy Mother's Day this Sunday, I'm the guy to do it. Ian, why do esports athletes have a short lifespan?
They don't have a short lifespan.
Oh, lifespan. Their careers have
their
a short...
Yeah, the esports athletes dead themselves do not have a short lifespan. So it's interesting. This is actually a pretty interesting article. I read it. This is from the Washington Post by Jonathan Lee. They start off talking a little bit about fatality. When we were younger, like when I was graduating high school, fatality was kind of like one of the first, I'm not going to say the first, people will argue it, but one of the first big name, well-known pro gamers.
First one I heard of. He had a whole line of creative Sound Blaster and products and things like that.
He was licensed and all that.
Oh, yeah.
They licensed them. Jonathan Wendell, they talk about how he made $458,000 in prize money by the end of his competitive career. His last professional match was in 2007.
Wow.
He was only 26.
So he was doing all his license stuff in his early 20s.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they talk about then, they go on and they point out that the Overwatch League, the average retirement age is 23. Call of Duty, the median age, right? No one, only six players have retired. The median age is 26. Average competitor age is around 22. So, they go and they continue and talk about how a lot of people said, well, it's got to be because of reflexes, right? You know, you're young and your reflexes, start to short out early. But I've never thought that was necessarily true.
Yeah.
And they said they talked to a doctor here, Dr. Caitlin McGee, physical therapist, says that there is research to show that reaction time changes over time and eventually it's age, but it's way later than your mid-20s.
Yes. I want to say 30s or 40, I can get you, but like
if you're 35 and you're not playing well at a game and you're otherwise healthy, it's not because your reactions are magically slower than someone 10 years younger than you. They're just better at the game.
This is anecdotal. My gaming reflexes in my 40s now, I don't think are any worse than what they were 20 years ago. I can still beat Mike Tyson easily, and that's probably always, I would say, that, can I beat Mike Tyson? That'll probably be the test for me, because that's, you need insane reaction time. For
every
that.
Year I've been alive, I get better at shooters, not worse. Yeah. And shooters are all twitch and reaction.
Yeah, so I don't buy that. Obviously, if you're talking like 50s, 60s, I'll be like, okay, maybe. But like, yeah, I don't think it's that. And this article goes into some of the other reasons.
Yeah, so they talk about how one of the reasons they leave is stress. Mm-hmm. It's a stressful job. And they even talk here, Dennis Fong says, when you're 20-year-old, you can be all in games 24/7, be super happy about it. You love playing all these games. But when you're in your 30s and 40s, he says, you've got more real life responsibilities. You may have a family, you may have a kid, you may have stuff going on in your life. He still loves games. I still play games, but it's not a priority to me. And I get it. And I feel like another reason they say, they retire young is it's uncertain. And I don't even, you know, some of these kids I blame. Some of them I don't. You get a lot of money when you're young. You're not always the smartest sure. with it. So then they start to realize, well, I can't do this forever. And esports haven't been around long enough for that to seem like a long-term career goal, like actual sports.
Yeah. I talked about it before. These games can wane in popularity in a few years. Traditional sports, that doesn't happen.
And that's the other thing. Some of these guys are, or some guys and girls, all these people are good at one specific game. Yes. And we have beaten this one in the ground, but it's very true. Just because you're good at one game doesn't mean you're going to be good at another game. Those skills, while you should have a leg up to on the competitive level, all of your skills are not transferable.
Yeah. Or like, what's that game that...
Heroes of the Storm is the one you always like to talk about.
But they canceled it. They're like, they stopped supporting it. Right? Yeah. Within, what, a couple years? 2-3 years? It was done.
Yeah, I don't remember the specifics, but yeah, we talked about that.
So what if you're great in that? What if you're like, oh, I'm hitting all these torches?
Well, now you go and you find another MOBA, but like I said, they're all different. So, you know, not all those skills are going to necessarily... A person who is great at Fortnite is not automatically going to be amazing at Apex.
Was it Heroes of the Storm? Which one's the one that was canceled? That was the Blizzard one. I thought it was an EA had one. Was it EA had one?
You could be right. I don't know.
EA MOBA. Sorry, but the whole point is this, is that imagine you were like an athlete, like a sports athlete. And you know, all of a sudden you're in your prime, you're making money, and then the league folds. That's what can happen with a game. And we talk about how we brought up before about how tenuous some of this whole scene is to begin with. That a lot of these leagues aren't making money,
right?
Like they're not like profitable. Some of these esports leagues, they just aren't. There's not enough outside advertising and interest to keep them afloat. These aren't like events where you go and buy tons of merch to support your favorite athlete or go to games.
I mean, they
like,
have merch, but yeah, it's not the same scale. Right.
So these are, you can't support it. It's not the same thing. So the most successful, you know, esports person is not making the same amount of money as a professional athlete. They're just not. It's not the same scale on average.
So making almost $500,000 over the course of your career, like Fatality
that's
did,
nothing.
It's great.
It's nothing.
It's great. A lot of money for a kid.
But you can't retire on that. You can't do much with that. That's nothing.
And I'm sure the money has gone up, but probably not, you know.
Not
not to pro athlete.
And again, what's the average person doing? Like, what's the average player on some, I don't know, some Call of Duty team making per year? Like, it's not going to be enough to retire on after playing a few years versus, you know, you play 5 years, 6 years professional sports. That's enough. Usually it's enough. Usually you make some millions, you invest it properly, you're fine. So there's all these factors here. The one thing I wanted to bring up too, I'm not sure this article gets into, is I would say the amount of repetition that's probably involved in playing these games, you probably get burnt out. You're doing the same thing over and over again every day for 365 days a year.
Yep.
No off time like in sports. And at least in sports, it's a fresh experience each time when you're playing a basketball game. Like, you know, like you can get burnt out on that, but there's something to be said for it's real life versus sitting in a chair with a mouse and keyboard 8 hours a day.
I think there's something to be said about the physicality of it. At the end of the day, being an esport is a desk. Being an esport athlete is a desk job.
Desk job, exactly. It's like being in a cubicle.
It's sedentary.
Yes,
your brain is going rapid fire, but your body's just twitching.
Yeah,
and I do feel like there's probably very high chances of burnout with that with that.
And then about just growing older. This is a quote from who did this quote. Here's the quote. When you're a 20-year-old, you can be in all games 24/7, be super happy, right? Fong said. But when you're in your 30s and 40s, you've got more real life responsibilities. You may have a family. You may have a kid. You may have stuff going on in your life. I still love games. I still play games, but that's not a priority for me. That's the thing, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you can't dedicate to be really good at these games. You got to dedicate hours, several hours a day just to probably keep up with the new people coming in trying to knock you off. It's totally different than athletic sports. Totally different in terms of how that works. No, probably almost no downtime, and you're just always stressed about it, and you have to always perform at the top of your game.
And you have to play every time there's an update because you got to learn like where they change stuff. Yeah, I mean, imagine if football updated its rules, you know.
Sure.
Fucking four times a year.
And it's not like, you know, a professional sports team, you know, baseball, you have up to 40 guys. Football, you have like 50, 60 guys. It's not like you have like stringers, second, third, fourth stringers. So if you get worse, you're in reserve. No, you're just gone. Like that's your career.
Right, there's no bench riding.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm sure there's a couple of alternates I keep, but like, you're done. Like, you're just done.
Yeah.
So it just seems like something that would be fun to like be a part of. Then once you get into it, it's like, what did I wish for? Like, now this is hell on earth.
Yes.
At least to me. Like, I just couldn't picture doing it myself. Let's see. This guy, Brandon Siegel Larange, is a Twitch streamer and one of the early trailblazers in the Overwatch League. During his time with the Dallas Fuel, Larange recounted practice with his team 10 hours a day, 6 days a week.
Barf.
I know. 10 hours a day. At what point is it diminishing returns on your psyche and getting burned out? That seems nuts.
Yeah, I want to make it clear here that I don't think if you're an esports player, I have nothing negative to say about you, because you really are doing, I would burn out on that. Like, that does not sound fun at all.
Wow.
10 hours a day of practicing.
Six days a week. There's no off time.
Yeah.
Like, you can't do it. 10 hours is your whole day. You, like I said, you're working a desk job for 10 hours straight.
60 hours on a video game is something that I achieve on very few games. But they're doing it in a week.
And it's intense gameplay.
Yes.
Like, it's not casual.
It's competitive. You're not having fun.
You know, you're like always zoned in about it. Anyway, read the article. It's really good. I skimmed over some of it. Yeah. And we're not even talking about the maturity level for someone who's a teenager getting into it to realize, what am I getting into as well?
Sure.
And now you're trapped in this world. There's a lot to this that's kind of scary the more you get into it. And like I said, I don't know how many of these leagues are actually profitable without, you know, the sponsors and investors plunking in more money to prop them up here. So, all right. Well, that's a fun article there.
That was a good one.
Ubisoft has disabled online functionality in 91 games. TechSpot article highlights it. This happened right when we were recording the podcast last week. It includes stuff like Far Cry games, the past Ghost Recon, Rainbow Six Vegas, several Just Dance games. The full list is available on multiple sites. There's Assassin's Creed games on here. Call of Juarez 2 and 3 is on here. I've heard of those. Far Cry 1 and 2 is on here. So now you're going back some here. Just Dance is from 14 to 18. So 18 is not that long ago, but that's gone. So you're talking stuff from like this PS3, Xbox 360.
Most of it is PS3 and Xbox 360.
Some PS2 stuff is finally shut down. Rainbow Six lockdown, but Rayman 3. So some of the stuff is probably, you know, 10 years old or more, 15 years old. But to do it like that without warning is kind of sucky. I mean,
yeah, I can't
all these games at one time. Like, you couldn't. That just seems weird. Like, some of these games have been played more than others. Still, I would think.
Right.
And there's a difference between looking at something like a Might and Magic game from 15 years ago. There's the Might and Magic versus like a Just Dance game from 4 years ago. Might still be some people playing that.
Right.
Online, again, this is online stuff. So, offline, you'll be fine, but it's still not great.
Might and Magic Clash of Heroes, they shut down the PC multiplayer. That sucks.
How old is that one?
Pretty old. It's a puzzle game. It's a really good puzzle game. Playing against other people is a lot of fun.
Prince of Persia Forgotten Sands.
I mean, looking at this list, a lot of this is...
Scrabble 2009, Ian, that was your go-to.
In a world of things getting delisted, none of this surprises me. It would have been nice if they'd announced
but
something.
All at one time.
Yes.
Flipping a switch is kind of weird, you know. Some are only losing online features on selected platforms. Just Dance 2016 through 18 is dropping online support for PS3, Xbox 360, and Wii, but it's still good for Xbox One, PS4, and Wii U. Okay, so at least... It's a sad reality. It's a sad reality. Oh, boy. And Ubisoft, according to this article, they're attracting takeover attention from private equity companies. So it says, unclear whether that is anywhere related to 91 Games online services being shuttered. I don't think so. I don't picture that being a huge amount of money to keep these servers up. But what do I know? But I don't think that would...
When I see stuff like 360 and PS3 stuff go down, it makes sense to me. I wish it wouldn't, but on some level, I understand it. It's when I see PC stuff lose its online service.
That's where it kind of hurts more, because people are still using PCs.
PCs are in an internal system. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so I would assume that they probably would not purposely cancel a popular game, so I'm not sure any of these had a ton of players, but yeah, it's... It, at the end of the day, it's weird to me that they would stop anything on the PC. I just can't imagine that it costs a ton to keep that up.
I know. It's almost like we need like a law, like you got to go at least 15 years after the release of the game. 15 years. Some of these games are not 15 years. Some are, but some are not.
I think 15 years is a bit much. I mean, there's always going to be extenuating circumstances.
Give me 15 years. Give me double the lifespan of the system. Usually, the systems are like 6, 7, 8, 7 years around there.
I'll meet you half. Okay, yeah.
Come on, Ian. Help me out here.
Whatever.
I'm trying to be good for the people out there. Power to the people.
Let's go 12.
Let's go 14. Sold.
Fine.
Okay.
It's my final offer.
14 years after the game's released. Okay. Wada.
Yeah.
Who I was next to. Next to and behind at Midwest Gaming Classic, almost nobody at their booth because no one cares. They announced, or Collectors Universe, the parent company, announced that they are going to be grading modern games. It was announced on their Twitter, Ian. I have a link to them, to the buyout. So let me go to the Twitter. Sorry, I had the wrong link there.
That's okay.
So it includes, you know, PS3 games. You know, Xbox One games are on that list. And I'm not shocked that they would go there and start doing this. But let's realize what that means and what does it say. And we've seen this with comic books. Grading modern comic books has been around for a while now.
Sure. Well, I mean, and let's also remind people that this is something that Video Games Authority does too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. VGA has always done this.
Yep.
But at this point, VGA is like who uses them, who talks about them anymore.
Does.
It's like what is it? Did you find it here? Where is it from? Like last week or so. This happened like before. Oh yeah, it's from April 15th. WADA announces modern grading. We will be officially launching our modern grading service soon, which will include 7th generation on video games. Up to now, the eligible consoles for modern grading being added include PS3, PS4, PS5. DS, Xbox One, Nintendo Switch, Xbox Series X, Ian's favorite one. Join the modern beta launch today. We have tested our modern process with select high-volume submitters over the past month during a beta grading phase. If you'd like the opportunity to participate in the second phase of our beta launch, we will be, whatever, fuck off. So, I guess...
How are you grading that shit if you got a backlog of retro shit?
Yeah, you're up to a year behind on stuff. I mean, and... So when I see this
seems like a really weird time to announce that, because if they're so far behind that people are considering lawsuits,
mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, that's going to open floodgates. There are people out there who have clearly been sitting on sealed expensive games since WADA that they couldn't get graded at WADA since WADA opened its doors.
And then when the
knowing that at some point that it would probably happen. And I mean, they're going to get fucking slammed.
And then the craziness that happened last summer probably led everyone to have their sealed N64 games laying around and say, oh, I'm going to get this stuff in or seal whatever.
Well, at sealed N64, they would have. Oh, well, I'm talking about, the modern stuff, though.
So. Oh, I'm just saying in general, though. There was a rush to set the price started happening last summer.
Yes.
And then you add this on top, like you said.
And then, right. And if they haven't cleared it out, I feel like that's crazy. I don't know.
It's funny when you look at, there's 103. They got ratioed, of course. By the way, no one follows WADA. They have 1,000 followers, which, again, harkens to how many people are really into this stuff. But like,
sure.
And probably a lot of people hate following them. I'm not following them. The first response, so I go buy a brand new game off the shelf, have it graded, and sell it for 10 times the price. Gotcha. That makes total fucking sense. This is what happens this is going to happen. People are going to try to get into the mode of doing this for like your favorite franchise, maybe your favorite Kirby game, Ian, you want to see slapped.
Sure.
The issue is this. With modern games in the past 20 years, you can find these games, you know, unopened more easily.
Right.
And especially the past, what, 10 years? Are you kidding me? So is this going to be like how people started doing the 90s when the bubble happened, where, oh, I'm going to buy one to read and one to keep unopened and pristine? I mean, that's going to help the people making the games, I guess. But this is not going to end well. Like, there's going to be very few modern games that'll be a quote unquote investment. Very few.
The more people get in on something, the less likely it's ever going to be worth more in the future.
Yes.
Yes, we can look back at the 90s. There are definitely comic books in the 90s that are worth money. Every comic book? No.
99%? No.
No.
Yeah. They're worthless.
That's why you can walk into a place like comics and stuff and find good stuff in the dollar bins. Because even good comics were printed and meth. Like, yeah,
it's ridiculous. Oh, that Daredevil comic, they only did 10,000 or 20,000. Even those aren't really the Fall from Grace one, whatever. The one he went all black and dark in the early 90s.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Remember that one where he finally killed the Kingpin? Spoilers. They could kill the Kingpin finally.
Yeah.
It was fun. Matt had fucking enough finally.
It's like, I'm done with this.
After all those years, I'm gonna kill this guy, which Batman should do with the Joker. I was so Batman doesn't kill. Well, maybe he should have.
Maybe. Sorry. Maybe you should think about that.
Maybe you should have thought about changing that rule for, maybe not for Poison Ivy, but for the Joker anyway.
Right.
So this is just, I mean, I'm not surprised to see that, but they've had a lot of weird announcements lately. They announced they had someone come on board for authentication. On April 14th, that's great. You probably should have had someone like that years ago, but there you go. You got that. And their population reports. And now they're trying to tweet about, hey, check out the graded NWC controller. I don't know, Ian. This is going to be a weird thing happening.
Yep.
But you're never going to be family friendly or like, oh, check out this Resident Evil. Did you know Resident Evil was a game series? Well, Wada, you don't care about game history, so who the fuck cares? Like, don't tell me about your tweets about, oh, there's only 3 graded copies of this 8.0. Enough. Hans Ipich. It was reported that he's no longer the president of a television entertainment Europe, or whatever it is, INTV Europe, Intelligent Entertainment US. So there was a subsidiary, a separate company started in Germany that Hans was the head of, in order to help secure all that nice Bavarian grant money. Because otherwise, they wouldn't have had games. They wouldn't have had money to get games made, basically. So that's what Hans was in charge of, doing that stuff. Hans,
I mean, when you really think about it, and you think about all the money that they didn't get, even though they said they were, I believe that the German grant money, I mean, that was, without the German grant money, this project would have never happened.
No, that was the House of Cards, because that gave them all those earlier games. Like games, they're packing games.
They built themselves on a handful of student demos that were built with grant money. Insane.
And then like Biplanes, the other ones they're showing were going to be based on those grants. So Hans supposedly wiping his history.
Yeah. He deleted, most importantly, he deleted the picture of him upon receiving the Amico in the mail, the one that John Alvarado boxed up and we talked about. He said it was a unique and emotional experience.
Oh, yeah.
To have it arrive. He even specifically said to pull the HDMI cord and controllers out of the box, hook it up, and play the 15 included games with my family. And said it was a unique and emotional day. He deleted that. He's cleaned up most of his Intellivision stuff in general. Someone DM'd him and asked about the situation, and he said, "Oh no, I'm still on at Intellivision. Still on at Intellivision. Yeah. I've just taken a different role." These people are still talking to people like they think that like this is a big company. Like, you don't. There's like 3 of you. There's 3 of you left. What do you fucking do? Just sit around all day making up names for each other? This is my new role.
They've been bleeding employees official. I mean, they've been bleeding on the LinkedIn. People have been tracking on like the Intellivision Amico Reddit.
Yeah.
Like charts. I think Gatoroos was one who like was charting like when people were leaving the company. And they're just and that's only people that have changed their, you know, updated their LinkedIn. Some people don't update their LinkedIn, that they don't have many employees left. Like, this is done. It's done.
Yep. Well, I wish I could find who DM'd Hans directly. But yeah, anyways, so he's clearing stuff out. Obviously doesn't want, you know, important people to see it, but he's still playing, talking out of the other side of his mouth to people. He still says that the game, unasked about the games, he offered up that the games are 100% complete and perfect. And that he's still working to get the systems out to people.
Keep the big lie going, Hans.
This is just what people have to say.
Keep the big lie going. Don't ever admit that, yeah, we're done. We have no money. We're going to declare bankruptcy. Well, that's a different company than Intellivision Entertainment. Intellivision Entertainment will probably be declaring bankruptcy if I had to predict, basically on all the debtors they have. And good old Sudesh needs that money back, too. You know,
I need to point something out, though. So apparently on his LinkedIn profile, he said that for a moment, he said that he was working for Hololive.
What is Hololive?
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Hollerad. And he was going to be the principal producer. Would you like to know what Hollerad is? Because I need someone to hear me on this, because it is the most insane fucking thing I've ever heard of. It is augmented reality for your car to make what it look like an amusement park when you are driving. And there are games. What? How dangerous is that? Who the fuck thinks that's a good idea?
That's got to be a joke. That's a real thing. Hollow
games. Ride? You will play games while you're driving.
Not for the back seat people. For like up front.
Yes.
What? No, that can't be real.
Pat, look it up. Hollowride. It's insane. I just, my jaw dropped last night.
Hollowride.com. H-O-L-O.
Ride. Ride.com.
Turning vehicles into moving theme parks. We spend a lot of time on the go. Let's make it count. We believe that every journey should be enjoyed, like a trip to a theme park. Hollowride gives you a fun and connected experience with every ride. Hollowride takes everyday journeys and transform them into hyper-immersive experiences by combining navigational and car data with XR. Oh, my fucking God. What?
Yes.
What?
It even says, like, you will feel one-to-one with the game as you turn the wheel of your car.
What? What? No, this can't be real.
He wants to take the fucking video game in the Tesla and put it through the windshield so that you're playing it as you drive.
There's literally a picture of a guy in the driving seat with a fucking and the passenger, both of them with fucking VR headsets on.
AR goggles, yes.
This is fucking insane. This is insane.
Has the man ever had a fucking good idea in his life?
What? So if you run over a child in real life,
they'll fucking balloon is going to pop up.
They'll be like dinosaur creatures, little cute dinosaurs. They'll be Kirby's you hit. Oh, fuck!
And I think people can read this. I think they insinuated something like, if you're playing games on your phone, that's dangerous. But if you're playing games with the windshield, that's different. I'm like...
The video literally has people like looking like skeletons in the road. I'm looking at this video. Let me turn the music off here. They're driving.
Yes.
Dude. Okay. The person in the back seat puts it on. Okay, I can get on board if you're in the back seat. This can't be while you're driving. This can't be. The picture of them hasn't driving, though.
Yes, the picture does. It's dumb otherwise, but like to insinuate that people are going to be playing this while they're driving is insane.
I'm going to assume they're not suicidal enough to say that drivers could be wearing this in the picture. The one thing about motion in a car, though, I was trying to watch a video on my phone in the car. I was starting to feel queasy because it's like one-to-one and you try to refocus. Imagine VR, which will never be one-to-one exactly, in a car while you're moving. It won't. It'll be off a little bit. You're going to get sick, like, instantly, I would say that, or close to it. You know what I mean? Like, I remember playing the Radio Shack Highway game, getting sick, looking at that little screen of the car going back and forth. VR in a car, you're going to throw up. You're going to throw up. It's going to be... This is nuts.
Okay, looking at this picture, maybe that is not the front seat, but I sure fucking saw it as two people driving with it. And it doesn't say anywhere on here that it's for passengers.
Okay.
It just seems like a bad fucking idea.
This is fucking terrible.
Yes. Even if the driver's not wearing the lens, if you're playing a game, you're totally going to have multiple people in your car yelling at the driver, turn left, turn right, like screaming.
Yeah, and it's just like, can we have some interaction in real life while we're driving? Like... If I'm driving a car, I want to talk to someone next to me, not have them look, oh, I'm looking at, I don't know, ostriches out, Ian, in the distance.
You know what game I used to like playing when we would go on road trips?
What are you?
You name an animal.
Okay.
Like elephant.
Okay.
Right. Elephant ends in T. Name another animal.
Tomcat.
Yeah. And then you take that T. And
that's not a real animal, Tomcat.
It's a tiger.
Turkey.
Turkey. And then you get a Y. So you got to think of another animal.
Yeti.
Yak.
Yeah, that's a real one.
Yeah, and you just keep going. Passes the time.
I'm in with that.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's way safer.
Well, I guess what it comes down to is, like with the other people, like Phil Adam, who was working with Mike Kenny at one point, you just have people that have a long track record of being involved with fucking terrible ideas that should be put out to pasture and shouldn't be working in any sort of form of business anymore. I mean, I'll just say that. You're just going from one banger hit to another, Ian. Wow.
Yeah, you follow this fucking, like, if you follow, like, the degrees of relation, we go from the Coleco Chameleon to the Amico to
Hollowride.
Hollowride.
just a fucking string of great ideas and geniuses.
Can you get the Vivarian grant money for Holoride there, Hans? You going to try to do that? Since you can't get them from traditional investors in order to prop up this bullshit? You fucking slime balls.
Jesus.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Ian, big news happened recently. Square Enix announced that they're selling off some older IPs and studios.
Yep. So Square is selling off much of their like Western properties to Embracer Group. Embracer Group, I believe, spawned from THQ Nordic and maybe someone else. I know they've changed names a few times. So Square, Embracer Group has agreed to pay $300 million to Square Enix to acquire studios like Eidos Montreal, Square Enix Montreal, Crystal Dynamics, and those would cover games like Tomb Raider, Deus Ex, Legacy of Kain, Thief.
The old Eidos computer stuff, like Thief. I used to love Thief so much.
All of that. Thief is great. It's still great. Fun.
Oh, that was a good game.
Yeah. So that's, like I said, that's all of their Western stuff. It always seemed weird to me that they had all of this Western stuff. I can't even remember when they acquired that. But I don't think it was ever their most popular stuff. It's probably a lot of, you know, money to hold on to. And Square has a lot of new businesses that they would like to try.
So they're selling these to prop up a new business, Ian?
Yeah, they're selling these to prop up a few new businesses. One of the big ones that they want to do is they want to get into AI. But the big one is they want to do blockchain games. They still want to do NFT stuff. So they're selling off a bunch of their properties to fund these experimental dips into NFT, AI, blockchain, which is basically the same thing. And yeah. They've already made a lot of moves doing this.
Can we go over the New Year's letter from the president? Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Where is that on here? If you want to go over it, go for it.
I'll put the link here, Ian. Around New Year's, Square Enix announced, there's the letter, Ian. They announced that they want to go into this, down this avenue of blockchain and NFTs. And the backlash was fierce and swift then. As it has been with nearly every single NFT game announcement the past 5 months or so. Everyone, GameStop, is putting in, $250 million or $300 million into their NFT bullshit marketplace. It's the way to go when you want to try to grab money from idiots, because that's who they are. They're all marks getting into this. So you know you're going to get some people, but by and large, most people aren't stupid and want to keep their money they have and not get you know grifted. So this was from the president. What was this? Yosuke Masuda. The metaverse was a hot topic in 2021. Facebook changed its name in October to Meta. The metaverse garnered so much attention that 2021 was dubbed the metaverse year. I didn't dub it that. I don't know who the fuck dubbed it the metaverse.
Yeah,
year.
Never dubbed it.
What advances happened in 2021 that the metaverse became adopted or people gave a shit about it? Besides an awful commercial that Facebook put out once they changed the name to Meta, that everyone made fun of. Talked about XR technology, talks about NFT here. We unveiled in May 2020, the medium-term business strategy we unveiled in May 2020 identified AI, the cloud, and blockchain games as new domains on which we should focus our investments. And we have subsequently been aggressive in our R&D efforts and investments in those areas, and goes into blockchain games, be they single player or online games, have traditionally involved a unidirectional flow whereby creators such as ourselves provide a game to the consumers that play them. By contrast, blockchain games, which have emerged from their infancy and are at this very moment entering a growth phase, are built upon the premise of a token economy, token economy, and therefore hold the potential to enable self-sustaining game growth. The driver that most enables such self-sustaining game growth is diversity, both in how people engage with interactive content like games and in their motivations for doing so.
Yeah, hey, self-sustained game growth, just like that Ubisoft game that got shut down after selling 27 NFTs.
When they say self-sustaining, they're talking about in-game economies. They're talking about the whatever token whatever token attached to the game increasing in value. That's what this is saying. It's not even it's so transparent. They can't even pretend. Advances in tokenetic economies will likely add further momentum to this trend of diversification. I see the quote play to earn concept that has people so excited as a prime example of this. I don't have to read further.
No,
that.
No, he wrote in a letter just to say what Decrypt says as well. The contrast to people who play to have fun and play to contribute suggests that the latter is possible in blockchain games where NFT assets may earn token rewards based on their gameplay. But we've already seen how successful that is, both between lack of interest, like the Ubisoft games, or something like Axie Infinity that lost like $750 million. It's not stable either. The only thing I can say about this is
they've been hacked twice the past month and a half.
Axie has been hacked twice. We talked about that briefly.
Once. Oh, there was an update to it. Okay.
Yeah.
It would take several years to recover some of the funds. That was an April update.
Okay. Lost where I was going with that. Yeah, but anyways, we've seen that whether through hacking or not, that this is not something.
Flash loans.
It's not stable. And at this point, we've already started to see, just in terms of the amount of discourse generated, people are losing interest, and they're losing interest fast. And to me, this looks like good money being thrown after bad. I think what happened is a lot of people invested in this heavily a year ago. And now they see the interest waning, so now they're throwing more money into it to try to keep their initial investment worth something. I think that's what's happening here. I don't think there's actually any desire for crypto tech, NFT games or blockchain games. This, at this point, is them trying to regain or recoup some of the money they've already lost.
One of my favorite British sayings being, in for a penny, in for a pound.
Right.
Like you said, sunken cost fallacy.
Yeah.
Throwing good money after bad. Well, we're stuck. Yeah, GameStop, maybe you should have been in on this. You could have made some money off the NFT marketplace, a year ago. Now you're trying to get this off the ground now when it's going to be dead.
And it just seems like one of the strongest fallacies that people always fall for too. And I mean, it's very not to just try to wedge it into something, but it's similar with the Amico. People get so invested in something, whether it's emotionally or physically or mentally, that they cannot see the forest for the trees.
Sure. Play to earn concept. I see the play to earn concept as people so excited as a prime example. I don't know who's excited for play to earn.
That's what the NFT games are called. I mean, that's essentially what you're doing. But yeah, there's obviously some people out there playing them, but no one's ever talked to me about an NFT game. I don't know anyone personally playing
The gambit is that it'll be, first of all, it has to be fun still to get people into it a little bit. But now,
sure.
Here's the thing, you can then earn your tokens in the game, and then it has real world value. You can trade around. But If there's not a real world use for something, at some point the value underpinning it in terms of dollars disappears, like NFTs. There's a reason that NFTs have crashed by and large, except for like a couple of, they call the blue chippers, the big ones, like the fucking dumb apes, because those are the ones that Jimmy Fallon fucking puts on a show, or Lady Gaga owns one, or whoever the hell else celebrity has one. Enough, Lady Gaga has one, but whatever. The point is that without the hype and without people thinking that it has some sort of use, like in the game, there's no monetary value involved, and then you're not earning anything anymore. You're just wasting your time.
Right. And it's like we said about the Ubisoft thing when we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago. The game goes down. Yeah, sure, technically you own an NFT, but I mean, who the fuck wants it?
Can you do anything with it? No.
It's like having Confederate currency.
Exactly. I used to have that old currency. We used to go to the historical places, you'd buy a little pack of oldie-timey currency. I think what makes this so weird and damning is that they have these properties that they are selling like Tomb Raider is still very viable. They make made movies out of them the past few years. Like there's a couple, they just rebooted it. What was it? 5 years ago? Whenever they can make money with Tomb Raider still, and they're selling that off. Like, yeah, it's just so weird.
I think Tomb Raider is the one that probably holds the most value. I don't know that a lot of the other stuff does, which is, I started to say this, I'm happy at least that the money that they're using to fund this bullshit is coming from stuff that they've sold off, as opposed to, I would hate it if they started using money that they had earmarked out. Basically, I'm glad they took the money from selling this stuff, as opposed to trying to get into NFT heavily, yeah, and then cutting the budgets for other stuff and then putting out, you know, their series that have been good, Dragon Quest, Final Fantasy, stuff like that, turning to shit because they don't have the funds.
Well, and at least Embracer will probably do something with these properties. They're buying it for a reason.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, Embracer will, I mean, they're going to get their money back on Tomb Raider. Deus Ex, I don't know. I guess you can do some remasters and try to revitalize that, I guess. Legacy of Kain, I mean, that was popular at one point in time. That had, you know, had some success.
All of that stuff, if it put out a new game, it would do well enough.
It would do okay.
Yeah, it would do fine.
I think I played Legacy of Kain in the PC version, I believe. It was like
my younger brother was really into those.
Two or three of those?
There's more than three.
Okay. I think I had the second one on the
There's Legacy computer. Of Kain, Soul Reaver 1 and 2, and then Blood Omen 2.
Okay, I think I had one of the Reaver ones on PC. Whatever that was, 17 years ago. It was pretty fun. I don't know if I beat it. So when you look at 300 million, that's actually not a huge amount when you include Tomb Raider. Because, like I said, if you can still put out a movie franchise, then that's worth it probably almost on its surface. But you can make Tomb Raider games probably still and have them be popular if they're good.
Sure.
That's a huge, that's one of the most popular characters probably created from the 90s.
Yeah, and the reboots were supposed to be good, so I mean, she's kind of back in the public image. There was a 5 to 10 year period there where Nothing's games happening. Of hers came out and no one cared, but yeah, ever since the reboot, it's been pretty well reviewed.
Were they announcing a new one? April 5th. There was April 5th last month. They said a new Tomb Raider is coming, built on Unreal Engine 5. So I guess, trust me, if they're buying this for 300 million, you're going to see a new Tomb Raider game. They're going to make their money back.
Oh, yeah.
Like almost immediately, they're going to make a lot of it back right there. So, because they did what? They did two new ones or three?
There's two new Tomb Raiders. There's not three yet, I don't believe.
And there's two new movies. I can't keep track of the movies.
You would have to tell me that.
Tomb Raider movie franchise. There was 2018. That was the first one, which I forgot came out. There was just the one. Probably COVID screwed it up. Is it going to do a sequel? Did it make enough money? It didn't get great reviews. 52% Rotten Tomatoes. Tomb Raider reboots the franchise with a more grounded approach and a star who's more than
so. Maybe they can't do a movie franchise anymore.
Sequel. They are doing a sequel. It hasn't been greenlit yet. Well, there you go. And Misha Green, the star, confirmed that she had the first draft of the script last year, called Tomb Raider Obsidian. So there's a script for the sequel.
Oh, okay.
So Tomb Raider you can make money on. People love Lara. I mean, people love her. Polygon boobs or not, they love her. It's just the way it is. Come on, in the 90s.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's they definitely toned that down, though. That's no longer her. That's no longer her gimmick.
That's the one that gave it. They went to more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right, anything else? I just get discouraged when these companies, I mean, Square Enix has such a long history of good games, and would you imagine
they've bounced back in a good number of ways over the past couple of years too. Well, some quality Final Fantasy stuff, both online and single player. So yeah, it is disheartening to see this.
I mean, Ian, the pain on your face when they're going to announce a play to earn Dragon's Quest. You know, like you're gonna, exactly like that's where we're looking in the face, basically. I mean, we are. We're potentially looking at it because if they do it for a game no one heard of,
yeah.
It's more likely to fail. If they do it with a Final Fantasy game, you're going to get some people at least playing it. You're going to have backlash, but some people go, oh, okay, I like Final Fantasy, I'll check it out. Sorry, Ian, you're going to see little slime tokens show up soon that'll be worth money. It's kind of sick when you think about it.
I'm not pleased.
Ian, we got a Patreon.
We do. Patreon.com/CU Podcast. You go, you pay, you get the full video podcast. You get bonus segments, multiple writings by me a month. This week was Pat. Thank you, Pat, because I was out of town. And car troubles prevented us from getting anywhere timely. We also do these poll topics, and we do hangouts once a month. Yeah. So, yeah, good times.
Okay, here's the... here's this week's. This is close. This is good, close. 48%. Do you get offended when others dislike retro games you love? 48%. That would have been a larger conversation, not just yes or no. We would have talked about psychology about that, by the way. And in first place, this is also a larger conversation about, I guess, the movement of retro gaming. With Portland Retro Gaming Expo returning, how will it be different 3 years later? And the reason we bring this up is because a lot of things have happened since the pandemic started.
Yeah, a lot of things have happened since the pandemic started. I mean, first and foremost, I think it's going to be a very big convention, bigger than it's ever been. Portland Retro Gaming Expo. We talked about this a little bit when you're talking about Milwaukee. But as far as East Coast or West Coast is concerned, it's probably the biggest. And I would say
it's the biggest overall.
And I would say nationally, it's probably the most important.
It's the biggest retro gaming convention by far.
Yeah,
you get 15,000 people up to 20,000 throughout the weekend. It's big.
Yeah, I love to go up into the like the green room area where you can get like coffee and whatnot.
Overlook
and
everything.
There's that window that you can overlook, and you know, you can see everything. Also, I think a lot of the vendors, people generally bring a lot to Portland. Hearing you talk about Milwaukee, in my experience at SoCal. Portland is usually where the good stuff goes.
Where the good, you mean in terms of like the marquee stuff?
Yeah, for like selling and whatnot.
Okay.
I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of empty booths by Saturday night. I mean, it's a 3-day event, but Friday is only arcade.
Friday is mostly the arcade.
I think everything is going to sell very quickly. I think people are in a buying mood. I know I was when I was at SoCal. I know that you said, I mean, you were talking about how you sold out of stuff by midday on Saturday at MGC.
Books were gone by 2 p.m.
People are happy to be out again. People have not done this in a long time. And people are spending. People are buying to buy. I think people are buying to support, but I think they're just happy to be out and they want to buy something.
Maybe they didn't spend that money. You know, go to conventions for over 2.5 years. You have the money sort of saved up or allocated, maybe you realize, oh, this is coming back, I'll keep it set here. Some people don't want to buy things until they go to a convention. They can buy it online. It's not the same experience going out and buying the games. It's not the same. You want to go hunt for things. You don't just go on eBay and click search for something. That's part of it. I understand that as well.
While people are spend happy, I also do think we're going to see kind of the upper limit of what people will tolerate in terms of prices for certain things.
That's a good point. Because as I said at SoCal, I was shocked how much some people were selling things for. Same things that I had. Like I had, NES Action set I sold. I had the Super Nintendo Killer Instinct set. And I almost felt like I was like getting taken for a ride because people were asking 2 to 3 times more what I was selling my stuff for.
Yeah.
I wasn't selling though. Right. That's the thing. It was on the shelf. It was still there.
So you look at it and it's like you combine the fact that people are being spend happy right now with the fact that coming out of the pandemic and the way the video game prices are, I think we're going to see people really pushing it this year. If people in this sort of buying mode aren't buying your stuff at that price,
yes,
I think after that, this is going to be a pinnacle point. I think where not everything is going to come down. I don't believe in this fast deflation, but I think we're going to maybe see the maximum of what we're going to see.
I'm slightly more bearish than you. I think, because we're still 6 months away, 5 months away. I think,
by that point in time, you might be right.
It might be the point where, because we saw this in 19. Remember, yeah. In 19, we saw people not buying things that they saw.
Yes, yeah. But I mean, I'm just saying this is a perfect storm, because in 2019, there was no reason that people had been to conventions. There was no reason they were spending extra.
Sure.
So the fact that people want to spend extra now, if your prices aren't moving, then yes, you've really missed the mark.
Yes. So the gamut's going to be, are they going to spend more because they haven't been out there? Will the prices, like you said, will the prices be too high where it's like, that's even too high for me, I'm priced out?
Yeah,
because when I started going back to conventions last year and seeing like Genesis and Super Nintendo games and NES games being 2 to 3 times that I remembered, I'm like, wow, okay, all right, are people going to be buying all these, like if a dealer has 1,000 games out there and they're 2 to 3 times on average what they used to be in 19, are you going to get people buying those, or are we going to see a correction happen on some of this? And I think we're definitely in a new bubble. It's definitely a bubble because it was deflating.
Yes.
We talk about the price deflate. I mean, Ian talks about, I think one thing he said, like he saw Earthbound, no one buying Earthbound in 19. It was sitting there.
Yeah.
I saw.
It wasn't even at like a stupidly high price. It was more than it should have been, but it wasn't insanely like high.
200 or something.
It was convention priced probably at like 200 or 220 when it probably should have been 180. Someone could have talked it down. But the fact that no one had.
The
fact that it was still there. I mean, Earthbound never makes it through convention. I didn't, at least not yeah. in the early to mid.
No.
Not in the 2010s.
I did not notice an Earthbound the past convention at all. I didn't notice
right.
in so, the box or go. Loose. I did not notice one at all. And the Genesis games were sitting there. Super Nintendo games were sitting there in 2019. I believe it was Double Jump, those fine folks there. I looked at they had their marquee case, Ian, of all the quote-unquote, like, top-tier NES games, Bonk's Adventure, Power Blade 2, you know, stuff in the several hundred dollar range, $300 up. And I went on Saturday and on Sunday, and I noticed they were all there. They were all there, just about. And I said, are these selling? Are these movies? Like, no, they're not. They're not moving. They've been moving. So that told me that people have enough and they're priced out, or a combination of that. So now the pandemic happens. Like, Ian, we've been going over this 1,000 times. People want something to do. There's more stimulus money, perhaps.
People are at home. They're looking in their closets. They're digging up old shit. Everyone and their mother had another year.
Need something to
relationship
do.
With the Wii.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was just you needed something to do. And that's when people, because start you're sitting around, you start looking it up. You start seeing it's worth money. The prices go up. People,
it gave it a shot in the arm. The stuff from the 80s and 90s, like a one last shot in the arm. So
yes, because Nintendo, especially NES, was certainly on its way down in 2019.
It absolutely was. I talked
for 99% of the games.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And I'll get into arguments with people. I've been going to conventions since 2010. I see the trends. I'm not going to lie when I said
I don't ever like to like boast, but I worked in a fucking video game store for 15 years.
But there's people out there who try to take shots and say, we don't know what we're talking about. It's like, dude.
I mean, I watched it. I watched people come in, and I watched 10 people come in to buy NES games every day down to, I'm lucky if I sell a stack of NES games in a week. And the prices just aren't there. We cannot ask for the same prices.
Sure. And then the pandemic helped, obviously.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's like yeah. Go back to supercars. The example Ian always brings up.
Is love supercars as an example. It's a shitty top-down racer, but I love them. But it's very hard to find.
Yeah.
And I mean, I couldn't get rid of it for $20 before the pandemic hit. Yeah.
But all of a sudden, you couldn't probably keep a game like that.
No, I anything like that got super popular.
Like a Motor City Patrol, or a game that's like uncommon and worth a little bit, or rare, or worth a little bit of money.
I had a Motor City Patrol, and I priced it at like next to nothing because the label had a rip in it, and it just sat there for like a year and didn't move. It was around 2019.
And that would tell
me that's a game that someone would have snapped up immediately in 2015.
That's a game you won't find easily.
Right.
You know, you go to a gaming convention, you might find one of those or two, like a Bases Loaded 4, like a game that's very uncommon or rare,
mm-hmm.
where you have to like search high. You're not going to find it at the flea market easily, a game like that. Like,
yeah.
You're going to be looking forever. So with all that said, what about the graded games? Because obviously in 2019, WADA had a huge presence there. You know, lots of things have happened.
This is not to sound.
Oh, is that Ian's computer making a sound for once?
Yeah.
Oh,
this is not to sound negative to Portland, but Portland being the biggest convention, you are more likely to have people come to Portland who would be interested in that.
Portland they're gonna gather there.
Yes, people. Portland brings all the collectors together, and that's kind of what I was saying. Like, there are conventions that definitely feel more like they're for in all things. All hobbies, there are conventions that feel more geared towards the people who are concerned about the price and pristineness of something. And then there are, conventions that are more guaranteed to the people who are just into stuff to have. It's for records. It's for video games. It's for memorabilia. Anything like that.
So you're more likely to get all the WADA, or excuse me, the graded game dealers, and also the speculators will come out at that one.
And honestly, I can't make a prediction for, I mean, I'll leave that
either.
To you.
I can't either. I just know what I see. I just know that there are too many games. Before the pandemic, people, you know, you had like 5 or 6 people buying up as much as they could. They knew what was coming.
Sure.
They knew it.
Yeah.
I talked about that in Carl Jobs' video. I talked about that, including a guy that graded for them buying everything. Guy works with a fucking company buying up stuff. And I'm looking at this guy like, why is he putting games in the back? Is he going to grade them? Dumb Patch realized, oh, Pat thinks people have ethics. I assume people have ethics. That's my mistake. My mistake for thinking this was on the up and up. My mistake there back in 2019. What do I know? Talking to the guy that creates it, saying, yeah, we're going to do this the right way. What the fuck do I know? Getting lied to my face, right? What do I know? Anyway, but I've been at enough conventions to see that almost no one buys graded games. Talked about it being next to a dealer at Long Island.
I was going
to
say, even going back to Long Island, that you didn't have... I mean, he even said to you. I mean, he was a nice guy.
But, very
yeah,
nice
it was
guy.
Just like, yeah, super yeah, I think he sold like three things all weekend.
Yeah, so, yeah, you make connections, but like you don't sell anything.
Right.
I was just at this convention. Milwaukee was pretty big. Almost no one was selling graded games, maybe one or two people. SoCal, there was only a couple people. Selling. But you don't see people walking around with them or buying them.
Yeah, SoCal didn't have a lot either.
And then at the WADA booth for consignment, I think I said I saw all weekend. I had time, especially later Saturday, Sunday, because I didn't have much there. Took a little break and walked around. Maybe one or two people I saw sitting down talking to WADA all weekend.
Right.
So yeah. it just was what it was. It just was what it was. So I think that it might be. Well, here's the other thing too. They weren't a pariah back in 2019.
No.
Now they are.
Yes.
So
I think that was actually something I meant to mention. I did okay. It. Yes, that is one of the bigger differences. Is back then, WADA was still kind of this.
It's interesting.
I viewed it with skepticism, but I still thought that they were at least better than VG. Yeah. I still thought that
we gave them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, we gave them the benefit of the doubt.
We shouldn't have, looking back.
I don't feel bad for it. I don't want to be cynical all the time, but yes, I did give them the benefit of the doubt
because a lot of the bad behavior hadn't started yet. Then it started happening. Then it was in full gear. Right there, with the Pawn Star stuff and everything else happening, and all these fucking articles that did no due diligence at all about all the relations between people. So they'll probably still be there, especially since it's under new ownership.
Yes,
but like the PR damage has been catastrophic to them, and we don't know by the fall if we're going to be in the midst of some sort of litigation. 5 months ago, we have no idea. So it'll be interesting to see that in terms of what Ian
litigation moves slow.
Sure. I don't know why you'd say it. You know, why would you have knowledge of that? But what's interesting though is that also we're going to see even 3 years ago we saw the changing of what people were interested in. Now 3 years later, if we thought NES was old 3 years ago, now it's fucking ancient. And now it's like you said, it's going to be stuff in the 2000s. PS2, yes. OG Xbox. That's going to be more what's focused on. But then again, with people getting back into it, it might be a mix because I definitely in 2019 saw. For the first time, rows of green cases of OG Xboxes for sale and PS2, like, it was more dominant versus the 86 type of stuff. Now,
yeah, it seems weird to us, but yes, the booths that used to have the piles of NESs for sale are now going to have as many, I promise you, as many PS2s as they can scrounge up in time for that, because the PS2s are going to fly.
Yeah. We're going to be even older, and 3 years is a long time for sort of a collectible hobby or... for games, and it's going to be interesting to see that. I'm not going to say it's be the majority, but maybe closer to 50-50 of, you know, 80s and 90s versus 2000 stuff. It'll be more of a shift towards that, mm-hmm. seeing the difference. Because I definitely was starting to see it a little bit in 2019. I won't be seeing the $1 NES bins that I was seeing in 2019, though, and $2 bins. I think I saw one person in Milwaukee did have that for some games, but... Well, what about in terms of quote unquote influencers? You're gonna have some newer kids there. Get a little Scott DeWaz maybe there, like the more of them.
I have no idea.
Younger Zoomer sort of people versus us.
Maybe it's because I don't pay attention to it, but I personally feel like that. I said this to someone in conversation the other day. Maybe it was you. Maybe it was John. But I feel like YouTube in general isn't as popular as it once. I feel like having personalities out to conventions isn't as popular as it once was. Or maybe it's all just younger people and I don't realize it. It could just be that I don't pay attention. I'd be interested in seeing who they have out. I really would. And I think it's time to get some of the younger blood in there to get people to go to that convention and keep a younger audience coming as you get older people who lose interest in it and stop going. You know, you want to be able to bring in younger crowds.
Yeah, he wants to send us to the dog track. So I was saying we're done.
Yeah. Yeah, send us to the glue factory.
So, Jesus, Ian, just kill us off. That's what you say. No, I having gone now to Portland, this will be my 12th year, or I guess 10th one in 12 years, whatever, missing two of them. It's definitely going to be interesting with the 3-year layoff to see different. We're going to see mostly, well, you'll see a chunk of the same vendors. You're going to see new vendors. Yeah. Obviously, we'll be there. We'll be there in spirit and physically.
No, I will be there 100%. I would never miss it. Not for anything.
I will try to enjoy it a little more. Well, I couldn't enjoy it last time because I might have had COVID. Who knows what the fuck I had that weekend. But I was hopped up on acetaminophen the entire weekend. Ian knows that. They had to put my microphone up to like 75 decibels.
Yeah.
So he, remember, you couldn't hear me.
Yep.
My voice was gone. I thought, I'm just talking a lot. No, I was sick. It was a combination of things.
I don't know. You know that I'm going to have a lot of stuff to sell this year unless I decide to just completely axe off an entire collection. So
really,
yeah, I hope to walk around.
We might have the CU podcast sound keychain thing.
I'm looking into those right now, and unfortunately, I'm just really unhappy with all of the options I can find through AliExpress and stuff like that. I looked for like
sound drop?
I looked for like 2 hours the other day, and I couldn't find shit. So I'm still looking. The idea. I gotta start looking into some different avenues.
If anyone out there creates a little keychain thing with multiple sound buttons on it that looks decent, that's what we want to do for the sound button.
Well, so, I mean, ideally, I want to do exactly that. And yeah, do
you
like
do a single
two.
One?
Yeah, do two. Do one with something I say and one with something you say. Sell them as a pack.
Hey, who makes these out there? Get in touch with us. We can get them. Hey, was there a company on here?
Okay, I think they were Namco Bandai.
Okay, we'll get.
Yeah, I don't think I'm getting a production run from Namco Bandai, but I think that's who did them.
Maybe I can ask Pearl. He used to work there.
Yeah, Pearl, you got any production hookups?
All right. Well, that was a fun topic, Ian.
It was.
This segment of the CU podcast is sponsored by NordVPN. It's what I use to keep myself safe online, and you can too if you care about the security and safety of your online presence. Take control of your online experience today with NordVPN. I've used NordVPN when traveling, accessing public Wi-Fi at airports, restaurants, the library, cafe, or just when I want internet privacy at home. And now you can step up your cybersecurity with Threat Protection, the latest feature from NordVPN. When you turn Threat Protection on, it protects you from malicious sites, downloads, trackers, and intrusive ads. Threat Protection is constantly on the lookout, even if you're not connected to a VPN.
NordVPN has a host of other benefits. All of your internet data stays safe behind a wall of next-generation encryption. They have a strict no-logs policy. They don't track, collect, or share your private data. It's really none of their business. VPN servers are everywhere. You can choose from 5,400-plus servers in 59 countries. You can enjoy the internet with no limits or borders. And they welcome P2P. You can share large files with no hassle thanks to hundreds of secure P2P servers. Worldwide access allows you to enjoy instant, secure access to hundreds of streaming websites worldwide. One account lets you connect up to 6 devices, and you can secure them all in any combination. It's just a click. Using NordVPN is as simple and intuitive as making your morning coffee.
Take control of your internet experience today with NordVPN. Right now, you can get a 2-year plan at a huge discount, plus one additional month for free when you go to nordvpn.com/CU podcast. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/CU podcast, or click the link in the description below.
Let's do some listener voicemails.
It's a voicemail.
Getting a little late, but we got to get some done. We got to answer the questions the people have.
Anchor.fm/CU podcast.
That's right.
Ian gave the point there. Try to keep it short and sweet, and I love you for it. First one here.
This is Paul from Raleigh-NC.
Hi, Paul.
So the two of you have just been cast in a new Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure reboot. Only instead of rock and roll, it's about the PC game Civilization II. And the two of you are competing against each other in the finals in a 2-versus-2 match. Which historic world leader would each of you travel back in time to get as your teammate? And who do you think would win the match?
Paul, I love your questions. It requires too much thinking, though, every time I hear them. I gotta role play when I listen to these questions. Okay, we're doing a competition 2-on-2, and we both get 2 world leaders to compete against each other at Civ 2. Is that what he just said?
I think. Okay. Anyway, my answer is Teddy Roosevelt.
Good old Teddy.
We're going with Ted.
Big stick.
Yeah,
that's the first one.
We're going with Bull Moose. I thought it was just one. No, we each pick one.
Oh, okay. Well, I love Honest Abe.
All right.
Not overrated at all out there. You know who I'm talking about. A versus. Yeah, Teddy's on the Rushmore, isn't he? No, he's not. It's Franklin.
Yeah.
It's younger cousin on there. Sorry about that, Teddy. We almost got there. You want Washington on there? Wooden Teeth Washington? No. Just dumb wooden teeth. All right. Next one here.
Hi, Pat. This is Garrett again from Alabama.
Hey, Garrett.
You've mentioned the inevitable Tommy Tallarico Amico documentary several times now. As a filmmaker and as a writer, are you interested in doing it? Why don't you do it? Maybe it'd be bad if you did it. I don't know. I'd watch it. What do you think?
Was it like half dare, half?
I think it is a dare.
Because I got others. I got to still get a book finished. I have another long term project. I can't do everything.
Also, I think the best documentary is going to need to come from someone a bit more partial, not partial, but someone who wasn't involved.
Impartial.
Yeah. Yeah. Because ideally, you would get word from in television.
Oh yeah, you want ex-employees.
You want employees, and
you want to talk to Tommy.
You want to get Tommy's take on it, and sure. There's no way we would ever get that done.
No, we wouldn't. We wouldn't. It would be tough. Obviously, I could put some Phantom money in, but I mean, like, I probably would. But yeah. All right, next one here.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Will out of Chattanooga. Just got through watching episode 311 of the CU podcast, where y'all talk about your disdain for the show Nick Arcade. And the mention of Nick Arcade jarred up a memory of a similar show that I used to watch in the mid-90s called Masters of the Maze. It came on the Family Channel.
No idea.
And I remember as a kid desperately wanting to be on that show. I remember the contestants got to wear this like cybernetic armor that I thought was really, really cool. And I wanted to ask y'all, was there a mid-90s or early 90s kids game show that you wish you could have competed on? Anyway, thanks for the podcast. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
To this day, I wish I could run through the Funhouse.
To the day.
Today.
Absolutely.
The Funhouse to me.
Yeah, that looked great.
Was the pinnacle of what you I loved Double Dare, loved Mark Summers, but the Funhouse made the obstacle course look like fucking nothing.
Yeah, no, the whole thing with the obstacle course was we're going to put some slime on a tongue or something and you just slide down it and get a flag or go to a giant oversized waffle. No, the Funhouse is amazing and we should research to see if those parts still exist. It'd be a shame.
I'm fucking looking it up right now.
So Master of the Maze was hosted by Mario Lopez. I did not have Family Channel, so I never heard of it. They dressed up. It looks like the contestant kids dressed up like in these like spacesuits. And then what the hell they do? They put a camera on their helmet and they walk through something blindfolded to find, I guess, a maze blindfolded. No, I'm sorry. This is not Funhouse. This is not Funhouse. This is bargain bin Funhouse. They're walking around. I think their partner's telling them which way to go while they're walking around blindfolded. No, that's not Funhouse. I'm sorry. I'm glad you liked it, though. Right, next one.
My basement recently flooded, and while I was working on getting that all fixed up, I had a thought. Don't you think that the three-point shot in the NBA is a little over-centralizing in the current meta game? What do you think that the NBA should do to address that? Should they move the line back a bit, make it only worth 2.5 points, get rid of the 3-point foul shot? I don't know. Just curious what you think about that.
I don't think they should.
The game is more popular than it's ever been.
Yeah, I don't think they should do anything. I hear a lot of this, and no disrespect to you, how you feel on it, but I've heard a lot of talk about the 3-point shot ruining basketball, and I think it's all bullshit.
No, it's more exciting. It's the most exciting shot. It's exciting.
Yeah.
No, are you kidding me?
I do not think that they should change any of that.
If you want to say get rid of the shortest 3-point shots in the corner, that is a little bit easier, and the percentages go up into like the 40s usually on that. If you wanted to say get rid of like the end of it, but you can't do that in the space and be fucked up on the floor. You can't do that. No one ever take a 2-point shot from the corner ever again. So you can't do anything. Like this is the way it is. You got to accept it.
Yep.
You got to accept it. And you still have inside play. Joel Embiid was our MVP runner-up, and he does hit threes, but he's an inside player traditionally. Giannis plays inside. Now we're on a sports podcast. The game is as exciting as it ever was. Some people, it is too offensive-minded for some people. They did change rules in the past year to get rid of like some of the bullshit fouls where you jump into a guy unnaturally. They got rid of those.
And I do. I'm happy for that.
They evened it out more.
I prefer. I want to see a little more defense.
You can't get rid of three foul shots on a 3-point attempt. Otherwise, you'd always be fouling a guy taking a three for 2 points.
Yep.
So you can't do that. It's fine. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. Just got a quick question. I don't know if you guys have answered a similar question before. You know, I use video games as maybe like a stress relief or an outlet. I'm just wondering maybe what's some games you guys like to play when, you know, maybe you're upset or angry or something and you just want to play something.
We do this one a lot, but it's an easy answer for me and I don't mind saying it each time just because if it helps you, great, it helps you. When I'm feeling miserable, upset, sad, whatever, I play Pokemon or I play a first-person dungeon crawler like Etrian Odyssey, Wizardry, something like that. I play the grindiest thing that I can possibly find.
Okay. I don't get upset, so I don't do it.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is 8-Bit. I'm a chiptune composer, APEBIT. I actually met you guys at Portland Retro Gaming Expo a few times.
Nice.
Anyways, my question is, out of all the handheld systems from days past, which ones do you think hold up the best?
Microvision.
Like, you know, some of them with the screens and whatnot are pretty terrible, so they're pretty hard to go back to unless you're emulating or something like that. Yeah.
Which ones?
I mean, if you want my take on what like the best models of things are, I mean, I think the Game Boy and the Neo Geo Pocket Color are my two favorites. Game Boy has a lot of pick up and play stuff. Neo Geo Pocket Color specifically holds up well because the fighting games play great and it has that thumbstick. They play fantastically. So it holds up well over time. And it's a very unique thing that even on the analog pocket will never be recreated perfectly because the analog pocket has the D-pad instead of the micro switch joystick. As far as my favorite models of those, like, cause you mentioned screens being bad, it's not a backlit system, but I do think the Game Boy Pocket is a beautiful, beautiful screen. It's truly monochrome instead of the green.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. I love it. The Game Boy Light is also really cool, but as an owner of the Pikachu one, the backlight does deteriorate over time and you start to kind of see where like the cell where that light comes from. You can see where like it almost like wears out. You can see like a ring behind it.
Yeah, the SP
the SP 101
might be the greatest handheld ever. Over like to me, like yeah, three platforms, great form factor on it. It's perfect size. I think that might be the all time. If you had to pick me, like what's the all time best model for? It'd be that one. There's a reason why they go for like now they're over $100 to get a 101 backlit. Yeah,
yeah, they're great.
No one plays on an original Game Boy Advance. That's like forgotten. Like that's like,
well, if people do, but they add backlight mods. Yeah. Some people like I personally like the wider grip, but it sucks unless you have a backlight.
You can't play it on its own.
Hi, Pat Ian. How does old Del Amigo situation has caused me to quote the angry video game nerd? What were they thinking?
We don't know what they were thinking.
We have no idea.
They don't even know what they were thinking.
They have no clue.
That's probably the problem.
From the Sega Center in Fashion Valley,
I think the newest developments would be the advent of the solid-state video games and solid-state pinball.
That's just one of the space-age games of the new Sega Center in Fashion Valley. Sega Center. Sega.
What?
Sega. Sega.
Sega.
Sega.
We're not doing
Sega.
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 This is fucking crazy.
Sega.
So there was an unveiled news clip from like, I think it was like 80 or 79. It was
79 or 80, yeah.
At Fashion Valley Mall had a Sega arcade. And there was a news, you know, a little 3-minute story on talking to people about games and operators. And it made the rounds, and that was Toy. By the way, thank you, Toy, for putting together that little.
Yeah, that was very funny.
It was taking a lot of time. So it was a very interesting clip because there was one game in particular, a boxing game that people said that we don't have any
heavyweight champ. That's it. And champ. even on the Lost Media Wikipedia here, it still says heavyweight champ is. You know, they never showed anything of it, but they did. That was the cool thing about that scene is there's no other video footage of heavyweight champ by. Sega in action.
And we don't have a ROM, obviously, and we don't know where anyone has a cabinet. So, like, so maybe it was just put in, like, there as a test sort of thing. So it's one of those things where, like, that was people got excited because they saw that.
Yeah. It looked kind of funny, too.
So I'm guessing if it was a Sega arcade, it would be mostly Sega game. Like, they would focus more on that, obviously.
Right.
What year was that? Is that on there? Is it 79 or 80? I want to say that.
Heavyweight Champ was 76. I'm looking at a different link.
Oh, wow. 76. Okay.
But I think clip was from 79.
Okay. So we're talking like right before arcades really start to blow up. Like Pac-Man's in next year. That's like the cutoff. It's like Pac-Man, you're off and running there. Okay, do a few more here.
Hey, Pat and Ian, this is Don from Minneapolis. Big fan of the podcast.
Is that Don on the phone?
Pat, I've been a fan of you since I first saw you on AVGN.
Thank you.
And then I started watching your show. Ian, I've just been a fan from the podcast based on your honesty, integrity, and love of food. My question is, if they made a Smash Brothers-style fighting game based on human history, what contenders would you want to be in there? I'll start you off with a few. Genghis Khan, Ernest Hemingway, Muhammad Ali, Will Smith, whose special move could be a bitch slap.
Well, Will Smith played Muhammad Ali, so that's kind of weird. I'd bring that up. Why are we getting all these like Bill and Ted questions this week?
But I'm going to go with Teddy Roosevelt again. But I will also say, why not? Let's throw Truman Capote in there. Let's get Edgar Allan Poe in there. Let's get a couple novelists in there.
Attack with a pen or some literary characters come out.
Yeah.
Teddy? Okay, Teddy has his stick he carries, but he was a hunter. He has a rifle, or he can call on his animal friends because he was the big first conservationist in our country to come and just attack you.
Oh, we should definitely get Vlad the Impaler in there.
Oh, well, Teddy had his bear too. Yeah, what's that?
Vlad the Impaler? Vlad the Impaler in there.
That makes sense.
Absolutely. Pancho Villa.
Pancho Villa. Okay.
Pancho Villa. I'd like to see in there.
Get some old West. Get Billy the Kid.
Get Billy the Kid in there.
This is really Bill and Ted.
Let's throw Mary Magdalene in.
Mary Magdalene. Okay.
Let's throw Mary Magdalene in.
All right.
I don't know. It's a fun choice, though. I could think on that one I could think on that question for a while.
We don't want to go down the religious road. We can get people after us. That's a good one. But yeah, it's whether or not you go for more warriors versus like eating like one offs, like Mark Twain.
Mark Twain would be fun. He could summon a knight in King Arthur's court.
There you go. You see where we're going. Oh, I do a couple.
Or whatever it is, a Yankee in King Arthur's court.
He did the movie, I think.
Yep.
This is David from Dallas. Got a three-parter here.
Three?
As a fan of fighting games, when rating or reviewing them, I've always had to split them up in two categories, pre-Street Fighter 2 and post-Street Fighter 2. Was wondering if you felt the same. And if there was any other genre where you felt the game came out that changed how you looked at all preceding games in that genre. Lastly, are there any pre-Street Fighter 2 fighters that you recommend? I have always had fond memories of Yi R. Kung Fu. Thanks.
There's like three or four only pre-Street Fighter 2. I mean, besides Street Fighter, Yi R. Kung Fu, Warrior, which we talked about before in the podcast, the overhead vector graphics game we talked about. I don't even count Punch Out or Super Punch Out because they're not. I mean,
sure. Soul Calibur with the first, Soul Blade
and Karate Champ.
Soul Blade, I think, because I played it before. Soul Calibur was kind of like my first introduction to 3D fighting games, but it was the combination of the weapons and the 3D arena and how smooth and snappy the gameplay was. That was the one that made me realize fighting games weren't just something that I was going to enjoy on a two-dimensional plane.
Sure.
They could easily make a good transition into 3D because I was really nervous about that for a while. When it comes to video games, I've always kind of hated dealing with like changes in technology.
You know, like Tekken 2 before that?
I was not a huge Tekken player.
Oh, I was.
No, so Soul Edge was my okay. First big 3D fighting game that I played.
I remember Tekken being okay. Once Tekken 2 was outstanding. I was like, wow, this is something.
I played some of it for sure, but
I loved Tekken 2 when it came out.
And then I can't remember what the first question was. I'm sorry, but when reviewing fighting games, what was the question?
Like, do you separate things in your head? Is there like another game like where like you view it like pre post a certain game like post and pre Street Fighter 2 like for a genre? I don't think I have another one. Maybe, I don't know, run and gun shooters, maybe with a Contra, maybe something like that. I don't know.
To me, I haven't quite, like, I don't have it, like, locked down, but I do have, like, in my head, it's kind of like a post-Gradius for shooters.
Okay.
And then I would say probably post-Battle Garaga for Bullet Hell.
Okay.
It was, like, the first real, like, crazy Bullet Hell. But no, I mean, I'm sure there is, but nothing I can think of off the top of my head. Oh, platformers.
Okay, that's
pre and post Super Mario Brothers.
Oh, there wasn't that many before that, but yeah, that's a
there one. Were, but they were sometimes single screen or very simple. I mean, it completely changed the game.
Yeah, Smurf. Some people could consider Jungle King slash Hunt a platformer. To me, it's more of an action game, but you are running to the sides and going, so it's like...
When did Spike come out on Vectrex?
Spike was not, 84, probably.
That was a platformer. It's a platformer. I mean, literally all you do is jump from platform to platform.
Darn it!
You go 83.
Well, you go up ladders.
Yeah.
You're a ladder, more of a ladder climber. That game's tough to play with the buttons. The Vectrex button layout, they had to figure out to put in two in, like Super Nintendo. The four across is rough on some of those games. That's a big chunky controller there. And then obviously you have platformers like Pitfall,
yeah,
and things like that. If you want to count Pitfall, all right. You want to check in with someone?
Yeah, let's check in.
All right, we'll check in with someone.
Hey, Pat, saw your tweet. Yeah, happy anniversary to you too. Let's both celebrate. When I said you'd be the Coleco Chameleon of YouTubers, and that you don't know anything before the NES, no lies detected. Seriously, what do you know before the NES? Huh? Where's your guidebook about the Vectrex? Where is it? Tons of classics on that system. You never talk about them, like Solar Quest and Web Wars and Rip Off. That one's my favorite, yeah. That game really inspired me. But the Atari, you don't know dick about the Atari. Like, Combat, one of the best games ever. I've never heard you mention it once. But it's not like you know about modern stuff either. Let's be honest. The way you talk about NFTs, you sound like the grown-ups from the Apple Jacks commercials. Why do they call it Apple Jacks if it doesn't taste like apples? You'll never understand, Mom. That's you, Pat. You're Mom now. Go buy a minivan. And then right after you do, go drive it off a fucking cliff.
Whoa, wait a second.
Whoa.
You're keeping that light and fluffy there, Tommy. What's happening
Tom,
there?
Tom.
What's happening there? Yeah, the Twitterversary of that awful tweet, it was funny. It was funny. A lot of projection in that tweet.
So much projection.
So much projection in that. You know, he likes to call people jealous, like calling Frank Cifaldi jealous gatekeeping. He likes to throw around jealous and gatekeeper and things like that. The one thing about Tommy, whenever we brought this up, it's like Tommy didn't remember that I worked on Video Game Years and had a hand in those episodes and featured the Intellivision and featured the Vectrex and other stuff. And it's just funny when you see stuff like that and it's like, well, whatever, it is what it is. What was in your pocket? What went off before? What was that?
My phone. I don't know what went off.
Well, you know what sound that was? What was that? It was a music file? Or is that a ring?
It's reminding me that I've got a...
Is it a reminder?
I have a... What's today? The 3rd?
The 3rd.
All right. I've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow.
Is that what that reminder was?
That was probably that, okay. Yeah.
Well, this was a nice see you podcast, Ian.
Sure was.
We had fun. Thanks for all the goodies, everyone that came out to Midwest Gaming.
Appreciate it.
I'm next going to be at, 6 weeks from now? 7 weeks, too many games? In Pennsylvania. It's going to be something.
It's close.
And then my birthday's on Monday.
That's right.
It was on the podcast like it was 1 year. It's kind of rough when your birthday's on a Monday. You guess you celebrate that weekend before, right? Is that the rule? Do you celebrate the days before, not after?
Yeah, kind of lame though. I'd rather like have it land on a Monday or a Wednesday and celebrate the upcoming weekend. Celebrate after, yeah.
There must be a rule for that. Like when you celebrate, if your birthday's on a Wednesday, do you go before or after?
A rule. I'm sure there's some guidelines somewhere.
Because next year, if it falls on a Tuesday next year, that's going to be rough.
Yes.
It gets rougher. But I'll celebrate this weekend. It'll be fine. All right. Take care, everyone.
Bye.